want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 494, recorded live on April 26, 2017. I'm your host, Ted Hardhat with
Taz427 and
InfoParrot.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. Become a contributing patron. Simply click on our Patreon or PayPal logo on our website to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at our Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. All right, so yeah, we had a week off. Just had some stuff come up that was unavoidable, so that's how things go. But yeah, right now I am working on. There's just too big of a dead zone where I'm at right now. There's a good 10-mile circumference that just nobody has put stuff in a while, a long while. So the constant reiterations of new geocaches just aren't happening. So what I'm hoping to do is to put out, I've got six different geocaches that I'm just about got ready that I'm going to put out in the area. And there's a series of geocaches that I originally put out that were multi-listing, but now half the listings aren't there anymore. And plus, I just want to see what they look like after the 4 or 5 years they've been out there. So they were good size. They were in like your standard toolbox ammo box size. And it was my Dragon series. So I'm very curious. I know one of them got swept away from the rains, and who knows what happened to the other one. So I'm going to see what I can get out of the five. I should be able to get four. Should. But
if you've got a desert,
yes.
Sounds like you've got good scope for geoart.
That's exactly it. So I'm going to take them out and report them out under geocaching.com. So that's my stuff for this week anyways. So Taz, how about yourself, man?
Oh, I've been busy at least compared to the rest of the beginning of the year. I doubled up on my cache finds, which means I'm actually got about 28 cache finds.
All right.
For the year. So very, very slow start to the year. But I did manage to get out and get a few puzzles, Where I Go, a few traditionals, a letterbox, an event, a Cito, and four souvenirs. I wasn't expecting four souvenirs, but between Donnerstag, Earth Cache, Cito, and two different 3 million cache souvenirs. That was quite a surprise. I wasn't expecting the 3 million cache souvenirs until it kind of like popped up all of a sudden.
Oh,
saying,
yeah.
Hey, go out and get a cache. We're coming up on our 3 millionth cache being placed. And I only expected one souvenir from that. And then when I was checking it, I got two.
Yes.
So
yeah, the second one is if you put out any geocaches, any hides, automatically qualified for the second $3 million geocache.
I think
souvenir.
It was any live ones.
Any live ones that you had. Everyone. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've got a few live caches.
There you go.
Out there.
There you go.
well done.
Excellent stuff. Awesome. Hey, Sarah, how things are down under, and okay. What's up?
Well, actually, this is going to sound terrible, but I was secretly grateful when. Last
couldn't do
week
the show last
because it meant
week.
I had a full day's caching in Rota Vegas. Sorry, that's a New Zealand joke. Any sort of town or city that's a bit brassy, a bit showy, tourist trap is something Vegas. So Wanganui becomes Wanga Vegas. Rotorua is the main one. It's known as Rota Vegas. Ashburton down south, occasionally called Ash Vegas.
Wow.
Anyway, I was up in Rotorua, which is stunning, which I'd, must be about 6 years since I've been there. The boys, the rest of the family were off for orienteering, but I went up, flew up there to drive, because our car was up there, to drive it back.
Right.
So I had a day's caching in Rotorua, and I'd forgotten two things. One, how achingly beautiful it is. It's a lovely, lovely area, especially when you're out of peak tourist season. And two, it's a thermal area, so there's mud pools, geysers, and that all-pervading smell of sulfur.
Mount Doom's type stuff.
Mount Doom doesn't smell. Rota Vegas does.
So in here, geysers smell, but geysers may smell. So a geezer here is referring to someone that...
An older gentleman.
An elderly person.
Yes.
Geezer, like a London geezer, like.
Yes.
But, we refer to the bubbly type or shooting types as geysers.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, a geyser... Well, there was a gentle aroma of sulfur around a good part of Rotorua. But it is lovely. And it reminded me that it's very definitely autumn here, because around us, most of the trees are evergreens.
Ah.
But up there, you get the maples, you get a few more of the deciduous trees and that. And they, it was the old tree on, looking like it's on fire. So I get to
your leaves are turning
reds, oranges, whatever. Yeah. But that's imported trees. The sort of native New Zealand ones tend to just stay green all year round.
Right. Wow.
So that was a beautiful drive back, which was good. It filled in a fair few missing bits for latitude and longitude challenges.
Excellent.
And we've had a plethora of public holidays because we've had Easter.
Mm-hmm.
We've just had Anzac Day, which is sort of our equivalent of Remembrance Day.
Yep. We actually have a thing in today about that in our notes.
Yeah, so that, and it's odd. The Aussies celebrate it slightly different to the Kiwis.
Yeah.
But never mind. But I did find a vaguely military-themed cache. But the best thing I did was on Sunday, I persuaded my kids, who were very unhappy about it, and a friend to go for a three-hour drive up the country to go to an event way, way up in the Ruahines, which is some of the mountains sort of down the central North Island. And it took us about 3 hours to drive there and about 2 and a bit hours to walk up.
Oh, wow.
And I knew I was unfit. Make no claims to be fit, especially uphill. But there was one woman who'd brought her pet dog along for the walk as well. And I can say I am less fit at going uphill than a one-eyed chihuahua.
Oops.
And the number of people who thought it was a cat was just very, very funny.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't...
What's that lady taking a cat for a walk?
I got nothing for you. Me and uphill do not go well. And, so yeah, I actually sometimes downhill is worse than uphill. So I'm just saying. Yeah,
my knee doesn't like that.
Yeah,
yeah. My knee doesn't like uphill or downhill, and no. I was doing some huffing and puffing last weekend.
Yeah, I bet. Wow, that's great. Yeah.
So that's I've just got to get three. I've got two of the three geocaches submitted. I've still got a final geocache and an event to submit as well, and I've got a couple of other ideas bubbling away, but that'll take a while to get even remotely organized.
Oh, excellent.
So that's me.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting the viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community and what's coming up this week on GeoGearheads. I don't know if this is something that is just said with sincereness or not, but the episode 278 is literally known as Old Fogey. So, and the description doesn't give much more than that. It says literally Old Fogey comes to the show to talk about his hides. All right. there you go. So I'm sure old Fogey's got a lot of stories. So we'll have to check out GeoGearheads on Thursday. But before you do that, make sure you stop on by tomorrow for GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast, where, yes, we finally get to do episode 200. And that should be a lot of fun. We've got a lot of sound clips from things in the past going all the way back to, and I don't know if, since you guys are kind of new to podcasting, but if you ever do a podcast and then go back to the original show that you started with and listen to a couple of those episodes and you just go, why did people just stay and listen? I don't understand. it's kind of one of those things.
Oh, but, I remember those shows with you and DeBear.
Oh, God.
The little green extraterrestrial guy.
Oh, yeah, that was his favorite. Hey, believe me, I've got mine right there. That's out of Leaf, where we put a geocache. Well, I didn't. Somebody else did. They put a geocache up into the upper atmosphere, and about 130,000 feet, and then it popped the balloon and then dropped, and wherever it dropped, that's where the geocache landed. Leaf, who is one of the green guys that DeBear used to bring up, is one of those. Matter of fact, that's how DeBear and I actually met, was at that particular event. So the picture that's actually here that shows the Earth is from the camera in the geocache when it was up that high. So, yeah, really, really neat. So anyways, that's
some way to get mileage on your travel bugs.
I'm telling you. Well, like they said, though, up and down don't count. So,
yeah. Well, I'm talking of how people sounded. My eldest one has still never bothered to change his message on his app, on his mobile. And it was recorded before his voice broke.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's lots of stuff like that. Like back there, my beard was a lot darker, you know, that kind of thing. There's
you're
gonna
have to stop bleaching it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, people take it the wrong way.
Bleaching it with age.
Yes, or if you look at the scene behind me, there were like three little plaques on each side when we first started. I mean, literally pictures. I mean, one of the pictures was one of these. One of the pictures was one of these, It's changed a lot over the past 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that'll be episode 200 tomorrow. And please, please, please consider, if you would, it does cost money to do these podcasts. And we have bills literally every month. And then the big ones come up at the beginning of the year. So if you would not mind going over to our PayPal or our Patreon logos on geocachingpodcast.com and click on it. And if you can throw us a couple of bucks each month to help keep us going, we would greatly appreciate it, because literally your funds do that. They allow us to keep going from week to week. And for all the people that do, thank you so much. And for the people that can't, give it a consideration. Throw it in, and you can even set for a certain amount of months that you want to do and go that way. Whatever's convenient for you, we are extremely, extremely grateful. All right. Speaking of Anzac Day, we had a message come in from Terry Meyer, which is Terry 209 from Tampa, Florida, that talks about Anzac Day, and I'm gonna. I don't have a mailbag thing yet, so we'll just have to go with that, Taz. Sorry, until we get you a song.
That's all right. So yeah, Terry writes in. So Sari, happy Anzac Day to you. So for those of you who don't know, Anzac is an acronym for
Australia and New Zealand Army Corps.
Exactly. You're much quicker than I am on that. So I'm a fan of the geocaching podcast, and I recall you mentioning Anzac Day during a show and your fellow host having no idea what it was, which at the time I didn't, but
I did
a little bit of research. I know and do very much appreciate Anzac and this day. I'm a former Navy sailor and used to be stationed in the South Pacific on Guam. I've been into Australia a couple of times, but not to New Zealand, and hope to take my family there someday. Years back, I was seeking orders to the U.S. comm station in Christchurch, but that facility has since closed, and I didn't make it there. when I used to work at the Pentagon in D.C., Washington, D.C., the long hallways and corridors are covered in history and display, and my favorite hallway holds the tribute to Anzac and all the various battles that U.S. and New Zealand have fought side by side. I enjoy the show. Thanks, Terry Meyer, Terry 209.
Very cool.
Oh, that's really sweet, Terry. I have a hug. Now, Anzac, it's just a bit of a potted history. It's short for Australian New Zealand Army Corps, and although there was a joint force sent by Australia and New Zealand out to the Boer War in, oh God, I can't remember, but it's sort of important because it's seen as the first time that both the former colonies contributed troops to help Mother England and defend the empire from the evil onslaught and all those sort of sentiments. And it's celebrated this time of the year because the first campaign that they sent a joint force to in the First World War was actually Gallipoli in what's now Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And militarily, it was a disaster. But it was not Churchill's finest hour, because he put it this way. But it's seen as sort of an expression of sort of solidarity from the other side of the world, mm-hmm. and Australia and New Zealand coming together. Although apparently in New Zealand, it's sort of viewed in slightly different ways depending on which side of the Tasman you're on. In New Zealand, it's more like a sort of Remembrance Sunday, a parade, and remembering the sacrifice and those who died. Whereas apparently Australia view it a bit more like a sort of Veterans Day and remembering those who served, sort of now and those who have served. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of slightly different perspectives on the same event. But anyway, public holiday in New Zealand, and the boys and I went down to we didn't make it to the dawn ceremony. I have done it, but not this year.
Mm-hmm.
But we did go to the local parade at sort of nine, that started about 9:30 in the morning. And the boys were there as sort of representing the scouts, because the schools come in, local scouts, guides, send contingents, as well as the classic armed forces representatives. But it's a public holiday, and it's an excuse to go and geocache, so I did manage to get
there. You go. Now, it's actually very interesting. The Terry also sent us a very cool link, and it basically shows the photographs taken back in the ones here are from April 25th of 1915. And it shows a whole series of different photographs in different areas. One of the other things that they have I never would have even realized what they're calling Anzac biscuits, also known as the Anzac wafer or the Anzac tile. Basically,
I wouldn't call them a tile, but we still have the biscuits.
I'm sure if it's military involved, it's close enough. Essentially a long shelf life hard tack biscuit. Now, hard is probably the key word. Eaten as a substitute for bread. Unlike bread, though, biscuits are very, very hard. So, mm-hmm. yeah. But it actually has a recipe for how to make them. So I thought this is cool. We'll have the link in our show notes. And again, thank you to Terry Meyer for sending that in, Terry 209.
I will say those biscuits dunk very nicely into tea.
I bet. And I'm sure there's a clink you hear when it hits the side of the cup.
Yeah, if you want to preserve your teeth, you better be dunking it into something.
All right.
Dentists love them.
I'm sure they do. They're either going to clean or grind. One of the two. All right, I'm going to let Taz take on here. We do have the bumper for the news, so let's do that.
The news.
Old, but still useful. This one.
3 million geocaches await world's treasure seekers. People of all ages now have at least 3 million reasons to go outside and discover new places and exciting treasures. On April 17th, 2017, Planet Earth's 3 millionth active geocache was published on geocaching.com. Geocaching.com launched in 2000 with just 75 hidden geocaches. Since then, the game has exploded in popularity. Active geocaches are located in 191 of the 193 countries around the world. And I know Scott would be asking me this.
What are they?
What are the other two? Well, North Korea and Ecuador, Guinea.
Really?
So, two places that I don't really have much interest in visiting.
Don't want to get the souvenir?
No. So, in total, geocachers have logged more than 572 million found it logs on geocaching.com, representing a mind-boggling amount of discovery and exploration. To celebrate 3 million geocaches, geocaching.com has awarded a special digital souvenir to player profiles of anyone who finds geocaching during the weekend of April 22nd or the 23rd.
Right.
And they've also awarded another souvenir for people that have an active geocache out there.
Yep.
So
yeah, they got all sorts of stats and statistics on this. I thought it was interesting, but it came up like out of nowhere. I was expecting. I think the last time when we hit 2 million, there was a little leeway saying, "Hey, by the way, right. 2 million's coming." This one was like, "Hey, guess what? Bam! This weekend we've got."
I'm just wondering if they suddenly realized, oh, heck, we're getting a bit close, like.
Something.
Unless there's all them that stealth one as well, isn't there?
Yeah, well, it's funny because when they talk about 3 million geocaches on Earth, they have an asterisk. And the reason that they have the asterisk is because there's one that's technically not on Earth, which is on the International Space Station.
Right.
So they all that for one geocache, they got an asterisk now too. Whenever they put that out, interesting stuff though.
Yeah.
And even the funny part is, even Antarctica has 50 geocaches. Wow. Neat stuff. All right, good stuff. We do have one other thing that just came up. And Taz, you want that, or I'll do it, or it doesn't matter?
You can go ahead and do it.
All right, they just came out with, and we'll have again a link in the show notes for this, celebrate the evolution of geocaching with the Big Blue Switch souvenir. Geocaching is involved, and so has geocachers, on May 2nd. We're celebrating the 17th anniversary of the birth of geocaching with a Big Blue Switch souvenir. Find any geocache or attend any event on Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017, and you'll earn a new digital souvenir for your geocaching profile.
Yeah, and they just announced this yesterday.
Yesterday.
So they gave us a week.
Yes.
And you can't put out an event in a week at geocaching.com.
So you're just lucky enough that if you have one.
So I'll be going out and finding a cache.
I guess. Like I said, I got to get out of my 10-mile radius to go find one just to make sure I hit it.
I'm just trying to work out whether there's a park and grab because I'm going to be fairly tight on time on Tuesday.
Yep, see? So anyways, I find it interesting. I find it fascinating that in a very short amount of time, I have seen geocaching.com change a bit. I mean, is it my imagination? Suddenly they're pulling out souvenirs on things. They're trying to bring up more interest with new features, which we're going to go over tonight. It seems like somebody woke up. I don't have any other way of putting it. But somebody at Geocaching HQ, maybe it's Brian, coming through and saying, hey, guys, we got to start doing something or what. But at least they're putting out the effort, and I applaud them for putting out the effort. I just want to see it continue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, I like that new things are coming up. New trying. Some will work. Some won't.
Exactly.
Some but at least you try it. People, but hey, guys, keep going.
Yes. I totally agree. So good for you, Geocaching HQ, for doing that. I thought it's awesome. And keep it up, guys. We appreciate it. All right, let's move on to the episode 494. Yeah, we've got six more, guys, and we're in 500.
Yeah.
Geocaching Podcast episode 500. So that'll be something. And be a lot of fun with that. But tonight we decided we're going to do the April Cacher Coffee since I was off last week and couldn't do it. So basically, if you're not familiar with the Cacher Coffee, what happens is we just go out and we find different stories and discussion points. It's good to be geocaching related, but doesn't always have to be geocaching related. So a lot of times we've go all over the place. So Cache Your Coffees usually have some rather interesting discussions one way or another. And so we just kind of went out and go from that. The first one that I wanted to try, and we can go into some of these as well, is the first one is a logging experience. Again, came out of geocaching blogs thing recently as well. And the way they worded it, again, goes into, I think that somebody somewhere is starting to say, hey, maybe we need to change things. We need to start anting up again and keep geocaching growing into a bigger, better, you know, longer lasting activity. And you'll see what I mean, because we're going to read some of this verbatim. This comes out of the geocaching blog, and it's called A New Logging Experience is Coming to Geocaching.com. And it goes just like this. We know the change has been prevalent here at HQ lately, and this is not always easy. Now in our 17th year, we're addressing some growing pains that only come up with being a game nearly two decades old, namely old code. Much of the website is unable to support the features today's geocachers want and need, such as adding a favorite point or a photo to a draft on geocaching.com. Building a new logging page also allows us to incorporate more robust features, respond faster to your feedback and any problems, localize our content to reach more geocachers, and fix time zone issues, and make geocaching.mobile a mobile response. That two paragraphs to me speaks volumes. To me, that is finally somebody is saying it's time to upgrade. It's time to get things moving again. And now we can see things where they're adding new, you know, souvenirs and trying to build an interest again. I'm starting to see a fire being built underneath geocaching.com again to start making it into the activity we know and love. So thoughts on that, guys?
Yeah, I was reading a bit about some of what the new logging page will include. And one of the things I find most interesting is that it will allow you to do things like not only log your cache, but also mark it as a needs maintenance or needs archive. So you can mark multiple things instead of having to put multiple logs in there.
Right.
So that sounds pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine there's always the risk of sort of, in effect, false positives with people just hit, especially new people, mm-hmm. old people like me, maybe not familiar with the app, just hitting every button and hoping they've got the right one.
Right.
So, you know, if you suddenly find that all your caches instantly need archives by people with three finds.
Yeah.
Treat them gently, I think.
Well, maybe they should have a restriction there for new cachers that you can't put a new needs archived until you've
well, they actually changed some of that. Yeah. They've got a new way of doing this, and it doesn't say specifically of some of this you're going to do on geocaching.com, some of it you're going to do on the app. They kind of talk about both at the same time, and it's mm-hmm. it's hard to say. And all this is new. This hasn't been implemented right. yet. It's going to be put in.
Well, I was wondering about, so you know how the current app, if I'm right, if you're not premium, you're limited to a certain number of caches a day, and you're limited on what restriction, what
definitely
DT
on the
range
app,
you can
yeah.
find. I'm just wondering if there's some way of sort of gaming it, making it more game-like. Of okay, if you found fewer than say 50 caches, you're limited to this. Find more. Not once you found more than 50, it gradually opens it up.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
That would give people an incentive to get to sort of keep playing and keep trying different things.
Yeah, it's a possibility. And again, this is the part that they're talking about on here. A feedback manner is available.
Earn your Pikachu.
Yeah.
Ooh. Hey, I've got a Lapras.
There you go. A feedback banner is available for any questions or suggestions you may have. That is going to be right there. So you can put stuff like that. That, I think, is huge. It's whether they listen is, and how soon they get to this stuff is another issue. But in general, that, I think, itself is huge, that they're putting it right there, easily acceptable, and going with it. It says the new logging page for creating a new log will be available soon. You'll still have the option of returning to the old logging page when creating a new log, but encourage you to try out the new page and provide any feedback. So what is new about it? Aside the new look and improved usability, drafts created on the geocaching app with photos and favorite points can now be completed on the web. You can also add or remove a photo while composing your log on geocaching.com. Lastly, we added an improved way to report a problem. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Needs maintenance and needs archive while you're logging a cache. And like Chad said, no need to write two separate logs. Simply select the report a problem icon while logging a cache. Choose the problem and continue composing your log as normal. I wonder if that's going to reduce the needs archiving as much.
Could.
I don't know. We'd have to see. As long I would rather at that particular point, if they're going to make it into a separate area, so it's not right in the logging area, you have to click on a separate area to go and say report a problem. That if it goes in there, it actually has the, hey, by the way, this is what this means. If you know what's need archive and what's needs maintenance.
Yeah,
I think that would be good.
That would definitely be needed, in my opinion, to help out the newbies. Also, I think that need to have a way to. I like the fact that the needs maintenance would not get cleared until the owner put a maintenance log on there, and I want to I want to see if they how they handle that.
Yeah,
I don't know. This is a sort of Wellington, Lower North Island, New Zealand perspective. There's one cacher who's I've met a couple of times, but he's not as active now as he used to be. But he put out over 1,000 caches.
Okay.
His listings are good, usually a bit of history. Often there's only so many variations on fence post, power pole, etc. you can do. Especially if you're out in the doing sort of long roads in the back, in sort of out in rural New Zealand. But he's not getting around, I don't know if he's playing as much recently. He's not getting out. And if his far flung caches get needs maintenances on them, then he's now just archiving them because he won't realize that he won't get out there in a sensible time.
That happens.
What a few of us have started doing, if we're doing a run into his area, we make sure we take a lot of spare logbooks.
Right.
So we do top them up. I've got about 10, 15 log, just paper printed logs in little snaplock bags. And if you get there and the cache is there and the log's just wet, then we've got a good dry one just ready to pop in. And it means that that particular cache keeps in play.
Yeah,
that wouldn't work in other areas, but works. It works for us guys.
Yeah. Now, and if you've got a dedicated group of people to keep up with that, it's awesome. It's just once you don't have the dedicated group, then it gets neglected just as much as any of the other ones that.
Well, some of these are way out in the back blocks, they'll get. I mean, we were finding ones where the previous person had been through on a cache run 7-8 months before.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very unlikely to get muggled.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they are likely to get wet or.
Oh, yeah. As long as the containers, keep the consistency of dryness as much as possible, you won't have a problem with it.
But if you want to put out your own trail, you can go out there and put needs maintenance on all of them.
It's hard for me to drive, and too many people. And I'd have a lynch mob after me if I did that.
Well, it's like, hey, a new series is coming out.
Yeah.
Well, talking of new series, when two of us went out and did this run around the back blocks. So there was a couple of obvious gaps, and we put out four new caches.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one particular, there's about three or four people in the Wellington area who are first to find hounds, and they'll go out and get them at 2 and 3 in the morning.
Yes.
That's not, they're welcome to, it's not my bag, but there's occasional good natured grumbling of, you don't leave any for me. And so we put one way out in the back of Beyond. We're talking about at least 3 hours, probably nearer four, to get to,
all right,
to get to it. Nothing flash. Bison in a bison on a wire by a fence post.
Oh my! For a 3 hour walk?
No, for a 3 hour drive.
Or drive, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you go. You go over the hill, out into the Wairarapa, that's 1.5 hours, roughly. Then out into the back box along a forest road. So, this wasn't one I placed, it's one of the colour map. And we wrote one of the particular caches is called the Leprechaun. That's it. That's his sort of nickname, because he has Irish ancestry if he's not Irish himself. And he's known as the first to find chaser. We thought, how far out can we put a can we put a new cache?
Yes, to get him to go.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And him and another cache hound. It was published in the morning. They'd found it by that evening. He got the train. Well, one of the guys was working out in that area. He got the train out to Carterton, got picked up, and then they drove and got it.
Oh, geez.
So I owe him a Guinness.
Whatever works. Whatever
yeah,
works.
We've done that to a friend of mine, Brian, a Texas writer in Houston, and I believe he has the record for most first-to-finds. It's over 2,000.
Oh.
I'm not sure what he's up to now, but I think at one time he was on geocaching blog as being the biggest first to find hound out there. And but yeah, he would quite literally drive hours at 3 a.m. to go get a first to find. It's like, Brian, are you nuts?
That's a special kind of dedication there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what you call obsessed.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Different people have different levels of obsession.
Oh yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So anyways,
although I've gone the furthest compared to him,
yeah,
for a first to find.
Have you?
Getting a first to find down in Brazil.
Yes, that's definitely the furthest to go. Wow. All right, so let's wrap this up. So the one thing that they did say in the last paragraph of this is, what's next? It says, all that's left for you to do is go geocaching, start a draft in the field, and come back to geocaching.com to finish your log and earn your smiley through the new logging page. Leave your feedback in the survey on the drafts page, or follow along as questions are answered in the forum thread. And again, we'll have a link to the show notes for all this as well. I'm also curious how many people, it's interesting. I love the idea of being able to, on my phone, while I'm going through on a day of geocaching, not to write out everything that I have to do for a particular cache,
mm-hmm.
and to go back to geocaching.com in that particular case and have the luxury of sitting in front of a computer and actually filling out the different logs with the specifications that I want to put in. I'm just curious how many people are actually going to do that on a regular basis.
Yeah, I would like to have the notes uploaded. Normally what I do is do a offline log on CGO. And, you know, if it's something that I want to remember, I'll put a couple words in there that I want to remember, and then I'll compose it later.
Right. Yep, absolutely.
So, but it would be nice to have that automatically uploaded to the logging experience. And that way, when I go online, I can do it right there without necessarily looking at the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you on that. I usually just, especially if I'm on a on a trail, I'll just on CGO hit the time that I found it, because that helps me keep them in order. And I, as I say, I'll add a word or two like cobwebs or lots of traffic or nice view. You know, just whatever grabs me.
Yep. Excellent stuff. Okay, the next story I had, Sarah, did you want to go over some stuff or do you want me to hit this one next?
Oh, you hit it.
Okay.
I can understand your accent.
You have an accent. Let's start with this. This comes out of the Hastings Tribune, and it says cashing in on the great outdoors. And I love when, especially when young adults get out and get creative. I'm just going to go through some of the stuff that they had here. In leading a group of about 15 people on a geocaching adventure Sunday afternoon, Brian Hoffman added programming to Springfest that fits with Prairie Lot's mission of outdoor education. The full mission of the Prairie Lot Center for Outdoor and Agricultural Learning is to teach agricultural appreciation, outdoor education, cultural connections, and the wise use of natural resources. Participants tromped, I find that an interesting word, tromped through and around the Prairie Loft grounds to find a pair of geocaches during the 7th annual Spring Fest. Geocaching participants are global positioning system, equipment for mobile devices and other navigational techniques to hide and seek containers at specific locations marked by coordinates all over the world. Hoffman described it as an Easter egg hunt on steroids.
I like that.
Let's see. Have you ever used the words "I am bored"? He asked during an introduction to the activity. You're about not to, because there's always something you can do. Hoffman said in the total, there are about 7 million geocaches, including on the bottom of the ocean, as well as the International Space Station. So there's no way a person can find them all, though I'm sure there are people out there that would try. There are 400 just in the 25-mile radius surrounding Hastings. Springfest is about being outdoors and being adventurous as opposed to staying home and watching television or playing board games. Do we play board games anymore? I'm just curious.
I've got some. I haven't played them in years.
They've collected more dust. I don't know if you could read the titles anymore.
True. No, the boys just play Magic, which is a card game that spent far too much money on.
Yeah, but I mean, can anybody say the last time they played a game, a full round of Monopoly?
Oh,
I'm just saying.
Not my idea.
Whoa. Yeah, so anyways, geocaching is a way people get out and have fun as a family and have a good adventure and a good time doing something outside. With Springfest right around the same time as Earth Day, I think it's really important that the great outdoors is more important than television and Netflix and YouTube and other crazy stuff we have in our digital lives these days. So, yeah, they say about how there's a lot to be loved for geocaching. They love the educational aspect of it. It encourages people to use one or more tools to get out and explore. Apparently, Springfest saw 1,134 visitors on Sunday, which surpassed the event's attendance record of 2016 with 1,050. Each year, they hope to have at least 1,000 people show up for the event. They said this is fabulous and said of the afternoon, we've gotten very good contending with the breeze, with the sunshine and the comfortable temperature. It worked out great. It might mean chasing a napkin here and there, but that's okay. Aside from the geocaching and other activities at the Spring Fest include farm animals, wagon rides with s'mores.
What are s'mores?
You don't know what a s'more is?
Nah.
Cracker, chocolate, and marshmallow.
Heated.
Usually you take the marshmallow over the fire, heat it, you put it between the two pieces of graham cracker with the chocolate, and it melts the chocolate into the graham cracker, and
you got a graham cracker chocolate marshmallow sandwich, which is great for people with beards and mustaches. Awesome. It's awesome.
Because you get a little bit later.
You got stuff to save. So, I mean, I just thought it was interesting. They literally put wagon rides with s'mores. Nothing more fun than having sticky marshmallows on a wagon, because
what today is? Today is the catering episode. We've had Anzac biscuits. We've had s'mores. What else are we going to have?
I'm telling you, all sorts of stuff. Let's see. Tractor displays, Nebraska Dairy Princess. face painting, story times at the Hastings Public Library, bookmobile, recycled art. That's just too many things go to my mind with that. Sheep shearing demonstrations, kids music with Jim King, and a nature hike. So, you know, they had a good old time, but they included geocaching as part of the fun with it, which I love. I love when they go through that, because not only does it introduce a bunch of people to the game sport and the obsession, it just really does have a lot of fun adding to any event.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of the things from the trip up to Rotorua was I managed to get and find both of the virtuals that are there. Well, hey, there's only 22 in New Zealand, so I'm trying to grab them
there
when I
can. There you go.
But one of them was walking way, way, way up a hill. You could drive about halfway up the hill, then you had to walk up the top to the trig point and get some information from there. But I was about 100 meters from the top when I bumped into another couple of Brits, former Brits, now living in Australia, who said, "What the hell are you doing?" So I told them. "Oh, that's interesting," they said. We go out walking, bushwalking. I wonder if there's any caches near around Melbourne in Australia. And I said, "Well, quite probably."
Yes.
And I looked and I showed them what I did. And, "Oh, that's interesting." And there were a couple of caches on the way back down. And before my phone battery died, I found one. He actually climbed up to the rock to find the second one in the crack. And I looked about 3 days later on the later, and they've already got about 8.
You got the bug going.
I might have just created 2 new addicts.
Awesome. That is awesome.
Awesome.
Now, I have to ask, Sarah, because this popped in my weak little mind here. You don't have any kind of camping. Do you have anything like a s'mores in New Zealand? Is this an American thing?
Well, put it this way: if you're toasting marshmallows over a campfire, they don't last long enough to be put between biscuits. They just get eaten.
Yes, but it's biscuits
Come
and
on,
chocolate.
Our marshmallows, I think your marshmallows are quite big, aren't they?
You have a different kind of marshmallow than we do.
Yeah, well, ours are about. Ours are about an inch across.
Ours is about ping pong ball size or smaller.
Yeah, that's about right.
And quite often they come with cups of coffee. I mean, you can order a mocha or a cup of coffee from most cafes around us, and they'll come with a couple of marshmallows.
Do you get hot chocolate with marshmallows?
Yeah.
Okay.
Big marshmallows, not those little.
Oh, no, I don't want to see the chocolate when it comes to hot chocolate. I want to see the marshmallow. That also goes well with mustaches and beards. No, I find it interesting because s'mores to us, that's as traditional with a campfire as anything for us.
No. Toasting marshmallows are very, very traditional, and we tend to do.
So these are s'mores. This is what s'mores looks like. So you got the graham cracker, the chocolate, and the partially burnt, melted marshmallow. And it they're awesome. I mean,
if you can describe
how the awesomeness.
Yes.
Well, if I ever make it over to the States, I'm going to pull
get
on about
you a, 40 we will make
kilos
some s'mores.
Because of all these foods you keep telling
me
about.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, with s'mores, it's even greater with small kids because depending on how
well,
long.
You eat the small kid as well.
No. The small kid gets the s'mores. It's how much s'mores eats the small kid. Because after a while.
One of the things that we have when we're going out tramping or walking is scroggin.
Scroggin?
Which is sort of. Yeah, which is sort of a mix, a trail mix of nuts and chocolate.
Oh, what do we call that? Isn't it clump or crumb? Huh?
Trail mix?
Yeah, there's another name for that, too. It's like crogs or clogs or something. I can't remember. There's a name for that for the particular type of trail mix.
But no, we tend to just don't bother with the biscuits. Just toast the
marshmallows. No. See, with little kids, not only do their entire face and part of their body become sticky and marshmallowy, then things start attaching to them, like twigs, leaves, ants, whatever's in the area.
Well, the kids are out of the house, so I can tell you a story from their childhood. Well, when Simon, that's the older one, was just a baby, and we went over to Paul's family for a family meal. And we got the high chair, And Paul's mum decided it would be a nice idea to give them profiteroles with sort of shoe pastry things filled with cream and chocolate sauce.
Uh-huh.
Give Simon one to eat. And that was okay. We stripped him down to his nap, to his diaper, to put it in American speak. And he was in a plastic high chair, so that could be wiped. So we gave him a...
Oh, yeah.
We gave him a... I think it was two of these profiteroles, and yes, he did enjoy them. He had the full face pack approach. And he had to be wiped down with a cloth to be clean enough to be picked up and taken upstairs to be given a bath.
We just use a hose. It's just whatever works.
It was a bit cold for a hose.
Oh, yeah. See, the only thing better than that before you wipe him down is picture time. So that you keep it for blackmail purposes when they get older.
Yes, we have one of those.
Yep, lots of stuff. But yeah, lots of cool things, and I just find it interesting how the differences are.
That's a cream puff.
Oh, a cream puff.
In U.S. terms, that's a cream puff.
Okay, now see.
Now for me, a cream puff here would be more something you buy from a bakery and sort of bigger.
They are kind of. Cream puffs for us. See, we have this whole tradition in the States. Now, people are going to go crazy when I say this because everybody has their own thing. I'm from Detroit. From Detroit, you have Saunders. Saunders hot chocolate with basically you take a cream puff, you slice it in half, you fill it with a whipped cream or even ice cream, vanilla ice cream, hot sauce on top of it, and then go that way. So, yes, it's one – you need a defibrillator by the time you're done eating, but oh, my gosh. And so Saunders hot fudge cream puffs are like – the thing in the Detroit area forever because Saunders is made in Detroit or was at the time. So, yeah, cream puffs are huge.
Mm.
So, yeah, big, big stuff for that. It's amazing how the foods are a big, big topic. Like you said, you got enough, you know, you can bring up all sorts of stuff for that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any other things that we want to tackle tonight?
I don't know. I'd better have a look at the show notes. I've completely forgotten what was in them. My thing was, what do we each define as bordering on obsessive for a geocaching?
That changes over time for me because different thoughts of obsessive was, for me, it was doing geocaching videos, a blog, finding geocaches, and then putting geocaches as well. So I was in when people sat there and said, how do you have time for all this where you get creative where during your lunch hour at work you would go through and do, you know, your blogging for you what you wanted to discuss, but every day putting out a different subject for stuff like that. I mean, there's so much I did at the point where I thought I was the most obsessive of so doing stuff.
For me, I would say it's taking personal vacations away from the family, specifically to go geocaching.
Oh, yeah.
Guilty as charged.
Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah. Now, for me, one of mine was getting up at something like 3 a.m. to drive an hour to get up a trail so we could to get to a trig point, to high point, to for an event that was timed to coincide with sunrise.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of those borderline obsessives.
I think for me it was especially when I was driving from where I'm at here down in Garner up to Oxford, which is about hour 15 in good traffic, and still being able to get up earlier than that so that I could find geocaches on the way to and back from work without spending, you know, yeah, hon, I'll be home by 7 and go that way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, obsessive is an interesting word because, man, I'll tell you what, it's – when you are constantly thinking 24/7 about what can I use for a container for the next geocache I want to put out and where I'm going to find it, and then you get out Earth maps so that you can start scoping for large bundles of rocks and areas mm-hmm. that you can put things. Google Earth was my friend for a long time when it came to, how did you know this was here? Just happened to find it and go investigating.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think probably obsessive starts with when it gets to when you're whatever hobby, when it starts interfering with your family or friend's life, I guess.
An intervention is needed, you're doing a little too much.
Yep. I definitely learned to pull back on family vacations. It's like, rein it back in.
Yep.
They're going to blow up.
Yep. It's a balanced thing, though. I think when I first started with geocaching, there was so much to do, so many different things to try and explore and whatever. So you wanted to do it all. So you tried doing it all. And that's where things went crazy. As you get mature in your geocaching knowledge and what you want to do, then you can define, you know what, I'm going to go for these quality caches or these caches with so many favorite points or this particular kind of geocache or event or what have you. Then the quality over quantity, I think, starts falling into play a lot more. So
I wouldn't say you'd stop being obsessive. You get more focused.
That could be too. Like,
I know people who are first to find chasers and anything else. I know other people who want to keep that geo streak going come what may.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas I suppose my obsession is, I want to find a geocache. Which challenge or challenges can I fit this one into?
Right.
So I'm sort of on that sort of angle.
So with you, is it more of accomplishing certain things you haven't done before or like to do?
Well, as I've told you before, I'm working on a couple of years challenge.
Right.
So at the moment I'm looking for caches that have combat DT ratings both over 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and or trying to get 1,500 in a year.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the other options.
Are you trying to get your DT averages up, or are you trying to get is there a challenge that has you got to find so many 2.5 greater?
Yeah, there's an evil, well, it's probably the hardest challenge in New Zealand. That said, somebody else will point out, no, it isn't. But there's there's a whole range of options, and you've got to do four of them. And the kicker is you can't use any cache that you're claiming for that challenge in any other challenge. I've got 250 finds within 21 days of publication. I've solved couple of hundred puzzles and claimed them. That was the second option. I'm not interested in night caching, so that option wasn't even considered. I'm about 60% of the way through the option where I have to walk a total of 500 kilometers car to cache.
Wow.
And so I'm about 60% through that. The evil one is I need to find 400 caches where the difficulty and the terrain ratings are both above 2.5.
Oh, wow. And being in the restricted kind of area you're in, that could definitely be...
Oh, there's enough.
Yeah.
I've just got to get out and get up the hills.
Yeah.
Or actually get off my backside and solve some of the puzzles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I'm aiming at for the next couple of years, but wow. I don't know if it'll actually I don't know when I'll finish it. The good thing about that challenge is there isn't a specific minimum period to get that you've got to get it done in.
Right.
And you say you can't use any of these caches in any other challenge.
That's the kicker.
Yeah, I think that's the one. That's the major kicker.
Man.
No, but it would never get through a reviewer now.
No.
No. Not
no
like that.
No way.
Yeah.
But it's probably the hardcore challenge that, and what's the final for it is way down on the South Island in the sort of, again, in the back of beyond, even in the West Coast.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you've got, and I've been told by people who have found it or people who know, that if you've got a four-wheel drive, you can drive to within a couple of hundred meters of it.
100 meters of it, okay.
And there's two or three of us that I know are sort of working on this. So if any of us qualify within a couple of months of each other, we're trying to decide, do we just hang back and collectively hire a four-wheel drive and make a weekend of it?
Get the insurance
Hopefully
package.
Hopefully one of us is good enough to drive a four-wheel as it should be. I'll do farm tracks, I'll do forest tracks. Gravel's not a problem, but depending on quite how
rotty
and muddy it is, I might leave that to somebody else.
Oh man! Well, good luck. That sounds awesome.
Give me a Humvee, I'll go.
It. We'll do it. Like I said,
get
the insurance. I'm just saying, pay for the insurance. All right, good stuff. Well, thanks, guys. That was awesome. Good show. I think it's time to take off. Excellent. I love Cashier Coffees. Get into really good discussions, including food. Now I'm hungry. Just saying. All right, let's close this. Thank you, fine folks, for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Thank you to Chad and Sarah for all that they do each and every week. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Chad Courtney, and Sarah T.S. This show is copyright 2017 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.